My parents were Greek-speaking. My dad came here in 1910 as a boy of 10, the youngest of 11 of the island of Kythera. His father was a priest, and he couldn't afford to keep his kids. He had a brother out here, and Dad was on his ship for 6 weeks, couldn't speak English, by himself, with a little sign round his neck with his name on it. And that's how he got here. When I left school in 1947, I became articled to the fourth Greek-speaking solicitor, a fellow called Arthur T. George. He was more of a businessman than a lawyer. I was walking around as an article clerk on 7 and 6 pence a week. I got very friendly with Bill Sawtis. You know, I go back with Bill God knows how long. Billy was then sailing, and he had an 8-metre called Warree, now down in Melbourne called Acrospire. She'd been restored, a lot of money spent on her. Needed to be restored too, to leak like a sieve. So anyway, I got very keen on sailing with him. But said Ted Hartley was an accountant. He got me involved with the bohemian side of Sydney. Have you always lived in Sydney?
Yeah.
You ever remember a downstairs coffee shop in near the Australia Hotel called the Lincoln? That's where all the bohemians were.
Right.
Everybody went there. We all want to be poets. And I really wanted to be, of all things, a journalist and a playwright. And I wrote plays. I wrote a play, and I got involved with a little. What I'm leading to is Ted lived in a flat. And one day he said, I'm moving out of the flat, and I've got this old VJ. Would you like it? And I said, okay. Good looking at a gift horse in the mouth. So he gave me this old VJ, and it was quite an interesting VJ, and it was a match. I don't know if you know the history of the VJ, but it was designed by a guy called Sil Rohu, who had a gun shop in Elizabeth Street for the Vaucluse Sailing Club. But this one wasn't a plywood one. It was planked.
Wow.
And painted inside with pitch. And it had a wicker spar. Anyhow, a friend of mine, Harry Thomas, the solicitor, who worked for me for a short time, thought he might like sailing. So without knowing anything about sailing, we took it down to the Middle Harbour Yacht Club. We got in the thing and off we went, a very light day, and we got about halfway into the stream, and the next thing you know, the thing sank. And that was my introduction to sailing. So anyhow, we had to get rid of it. It was only good for firewood. But I looked up in the paper and I found another VJ for sale, 25 quid I think it was.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, it leaked like a sieve as well. And we were actually out off Grotto Point in a very quiet day, and the whole thing just very late in the afternoon, just level with the water. It looked like a long swim home. Fortunately, we got towed in by a very kindly power boat. So VJ was no good for two burly blokes. So I then ended up buying another boat, it was 18-footer, designed by Alan Payne, very similar to a VS, except it had a fin bulb keel with lead on it. She was owned by Bill Sawtis and George Gertis. You know, three Greek guys. There's me, became Commodore of the Amateurs. George was Commodore of the CYC, and Bill was Commodore twice. Anyway, they used to own this boat together. It was called Nereida, in Greek, Nereida, which means a sea spirit. I bought that, and it was moored right opposite the club. And I sailed that for about 2 years. One adventure I had with her. They don't have it anymore. The last race of the season was called the Nominated Skipper's Day. Whereas the owner wasn't on the tiller. You had to put one of the other guys on the tiller. And all of the bloke crew I had were surfies from Maroubra Surfers. So they weren't afraid of a bit of white water. So it was blowing a reasonably fresh sou'easter. We're coming up, you know, ripping along. I put a trapeze on it, and what we now call the Lady Jane buoy. So we're right at the mark, and she pickles. Oh, gosh. Boats everywhere. And there was a very nice guy, I remember Tony something or other, and he pulled out of the race to help us. So he couldn't tow the boat anywhere, so he took us down into Middle Harbour. So there I was with my boat floating somewhere up near the heads, and no boat, and we were on the beach of Middle Harbour, and a bloke came past in a Navy work boat. I offered him £5 if he'd take us out and look for the boat. So we get out there and I get it towards Grotto Point, and I look over the side, and there was a shark as big as the boat, nearly. He was heading in the same direction as we were. Anyway, I sort of figured with the wind and the tide the way it is, it might have been over near Old Man's Hat. And I was bloody all right. Of course, we could see the white sails on the water. Of course, the guy offered to tow us back to Middle Harbour. Somebody had to jump in the water, tie the rope on. Nobody wanted to do it because they'd all seen the bloody shark. It was my boat. So I figured, oh, well, nobody's ever been taken off her. So I jumped off and tied it onto the rope on the mast, and this bloke towed me in. Anyway, it got this age, but too small for me sort of thing, because I had family and that. So I ended up by buying a Hayes-built boat, a sister ship to Hoana. Now, I've got to tell you about Hayes. He used to build boats down on Middle Harbour. He used to carve them by hand. There used to be a lake or a lagoon or something down in Middle Harbour, and he used to walk around towing them and watching the ripples, and he'd take a bit off and put a bit on. He finally got a design, and he built quite a number of them in various lengths, scaled them up and scaled them down. So Hoana was one, and my boat was called Janet originally, but I ended up calling it Ondine, because Ondine is another name for a sea spirit, having the previous boat, Nereida, being a sea spirit. She was 40 years old when I bought it. Previous owner, Swaddling, sailing down from Long Reef, and he fell off and drowned. But then she was sold to a guy who owns White Elevators. He owned it for quite a number of years, and I was lucky enough to get it. It was a nice little boat, it had no headroom. So when I bought it, she didn't have a bowsprit. And we used to be in the second division, and we were on 30 plus. So I looked at the papers, and she was designed as a cutter. So we put a bowsprit on it, and we put a great big Yankee on it. We went from minus 35, we went up to scratch.
Wow.
And that was Ondine. I'll tell you another story, but this is a personal story, but for nothing to do with sailing. But I was going out on a Wednesday afternoon race, and I had a bunch of businessmen taking them out. And Bill had Lassalas on the end of the CYC Marina, and he says, I've had a bottle of champagne on the race. So he had five businessmen as well. So believe it or not, we won by a boat length. So we went back to the CYC and they sent over their champagne. So one of my guys, the businessmen, they were charmed, they loved it.
Yeah.
He bought and said, oh, we ought to send one back. So he sent one back. And then one of the other guys said, well, we ought to send one back. 11:30 or 12 o'clock comes around, no dinner. How many bottles of champagne we drank, I don't know. But that was the days when they tested you. Drinking had to count to 100 and your point, I walked the line.
Yeah.
And I lived at Clontarf at the time. Anyway, I got home and I had this really steep drive in a garage at the top. Anyway, I promptly fell asleep. My wife, Julia, comes down about 4 o'clock in the morning and gives me the rounds of the kitchen, said, come on, you. So I thought, oh, hell, I could smell some burning. So, oh, God, don't forget I had the bloody brakes on. So I eased the brakes off slightly. Anyway, I get up into the house and take him, getting into my jammies, and I hear crash, bang, boom, thump. I look down, there's the bloody car at the bottom of the, half turned over in the, anyhow, all the neighbours came out, and I hadn't met them all, right? So I'm, 5 o'clock in the morning it was, or something like that, I'm Fred, I'm Joe, yeah. Anyway, that's a side story.
Yeah.
The old Ondine didn't have headroom, and I was getting a bit tired of no headroom, and the kids were getting bigger, so we decided to sell it. Anyway, at that point of time, this is where my story starts now, in front of the CYC was Lolita with a broken stump of a wooden mast. Everybody had looked at this, and we heard about the story about how she'd done the roll and what have you.
Yeah.
And nobody wanted it, and I actually looked at it with a view to buying it. But, you know, the story was that she'd been racked. She went over, and
yeah.
Now the skipper was a bloke called Bob Young, who turns out was an ex-RAF pilot plus navigator. And he used to be at the club telling the story and what happened every night.
But so you were convinced that Lolita was sound?
Yeah, I went and had a look at her. She wasn't screwed. She's nail clenched. A lot of old shippies say that's the best method.
Yeah.
Nail clenching. And the other thing about her was that she was built at a time when there was a fair bit of pew and pine around. And she's built in 35-foot lengths, no butt joints at all. So she, when you hit a wave, she goes boing and keeps on going, right?
Yeah.
Still doesn't leak. So we bought the boat, so the next thing you know, I wanted to be the first amateur Commodore to win the Hobart race.
Right.
At that time, there was an engineer, had a workshop next to the CYC. I won't mention his name. I can't do it without spitting ships and biting my tongue, and I said, look, the boat's 30 years old, I want a new rudder assembly, because I could feel that there was, he slipped it and he worked on the rudder. So I go in the Hobart race, or the second night out, we're off Green Point, just about ready to jump into the straits. I was down below and the helmsman said, skipper, I've got no steerage. What? All right, go up. Jiggle the helm, like this.
Nothing.
So we had to pull out, and we were very hard southerly blowing. So we ran up the coast, steering the sails only. And the breeze slowly went round to the east, northeast, and till we got off Ulla Dulla. So we managed to steer our way into Ulla Dulla, threw an anchor out at the back, the brakes. Now, there was no co-op there at the time, just a long, sloping beach.
Ah, yeah.
And there we were about 11 o'clock at night. Now, I had a bloke on board at the time called John Gallant. Now, John was an interesting bloke. He was born in Newfoundland, Canadian, and grown up in the Blue Nose Schooners up on the Grand Banks. And it was a bailer boy out in the Dories, bailing and hooking. He was also, had been in the Merchant Navy. He was a seaman to his fingertips, he really was. He says, oh, the tide's coming in. Oh, I said, oh, yeah. So what? Well, he said, you know, you could careen this boat. Well, I knew what careening was, I'd never done it. Anyway, to make a long story short, he talked me into it. So we swam a guy out. We managed to get the anchor out and we swam it ashore. And as the tide came in, we hauled her in. Now, when it was high tide, we had to turn the boat around so the rudder assembly was only about this far underneath the water. Now, there was another guy on board, Dougie Cowan. He was a fitter and turner. So we got the brush working on the assembly and we managed to pull it apart. And guess what? That unspeakable so-and-so forgot to put the key in the keyway. There's no key in the bloody thing. And all of us working on it originally was friction. So by the time that wore out, Right. So I searched all over the boat. We found this big vault. So we filed and filed and we filed and filed, and we made a key and we put it in. In the morning, and it was a bright sunny day, there's a tourist bus. It was surrounded by tourists and offering us chocolate sandwiches. So, no, we're sailing, we're still racing. No outside assistance. So we hauled ourselves off and started off in the race again. Now, what happened? We got down into, off the ship of Tassie, and another hard sou'wester came in. And this, unfortunately, this bolt was mono. It's fairly soft. And she started to go again. So I had to take the sensible course, and we pulled tail and pulled out of the race. Then we come to the Kelly Cup.
Yes.
Now, in the old days, they weren't as squeamish as they are today. If the starting boat could hold an anchor, they started the race. On this occasion, on the Kelly Cup in 1967, it had been blowing, just like it's been blowing recently, three bags full, really, really hard wind, over 30, 40, 50 knots, only two boats fronted up. Myself and a fellow called David Wern, who owned Waitiri. Waitiri, it was used to belong to Harry Lloyd, who was then chairman of the stock exchange, but also an ex-commodore of the Amateurs.
Oh. Right?
But anyway, Waitiri was out with David Warne, and she had a bowsprit, which features in the
yes.
story. We had all the Maruva boys on board. We didn't care, and I was not that experienced. And we had to do a run up to Chowder Bay, and it was blowing every bit of 30 or 40 knots. And guess what? Who was silly enough to put a kite up? Wow. That was a ride and a half. Anyway, we got ahead of him then, and unfortunately, because we couldn't get the kite down, we would pass the mark, and he got ahead of us. So finally, we got ahead of him again. And the next boy was a mark they put down there right off Cremorne Point. We didn't put any kite up this time, but we had to do a jive around and go back the other way. When we finally got down to the mark, it had drifted in towards the shore. And there wouldn't have been any too much more distance than from here to the front door. And we had to jibe around the bloody mark in 40 knots. Fuck, I thought, if anything goes wrong, you know. Anyhow, away we went. Boom! Finally, we got around. Anyway, we're having a duel with this break. So I'm ahead of this guy. Now, in the morning, I had gone to Wentworth and I'd bought a new head sheet. Everything's going great. Then we ended up down near the squadron, they're out of Mark of Carrabba, and then we had a beat back to the finish at Clark Island. And I'm ahead by literally 50 to 80 metres, ready to win the race. There's the line in front of us. Ah, and the headsail sheet broke. The new sheet I bought, that was the days of cotton rope, but this was a nylon rope. I thought, you know, it was going to be double its strength. Anyway, we tried to reeve the windward sheet, the lazy windward sheet through the block. But by the time we did that, he actually beat us by the length of his bowsprit, 2 seconds.
Phew.
That's how I got beaten for the bloody Kelly Cup.
But you did win it.
No, I didn't.
No, in 2014.
Yeah.